This is Morning Air.
This is about educating a people that for 40 years haven't been given the full truth. It's time now to speak the truth.
When you do things to the best of your ability, keeping Jesus number one and doing everything you possibly can for His glory, that's a winner.
You are called to make the light of Christ shine brightly in the world.
Bringing the light of Christ to start your day.
This is Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us. Glenn Levering's in for John for this hour. We appreciate you being along today. We're going to talk about marriage this hour. Preparation for a sacramental marriage starts early, really early. I think it, maybe college, maybe high school, maybe grade school, in the womb. We'll talk about that with Father Thomas Loya before the hour is through. Maybe you're enjoying the Olympics out of Tokyo here over the past several days. We're going to talk about how being a mom actually can be, ought to be, is an Olympic sport. And who better to talk to us than a mom of a large family with six kids and she's a licensed independent clinical social worker, too, a regular on Morning Air here, as well as KYES, our Relevant Radio affiliate in central Minnesota, too. We welcome to the podium. They're standing tall waiting for the national anthem. It's Kim Morgan. Kim, how are you today?
Well, I did like the power music bringing in the show today. It kind of was invigorating as a mom, like, yes, I can get up this morning and do all these things on the great mom list.
There it is. There, it's coming back. It's coming now. You know, through the years watching the Olympics, and I know you're a fan of the Olympics too, don't you like watching the reaction sometimes of people? And you can watch like clips of the best, gold medal moments, on YouTube where it's one tear after another. But does sometimes that tear you up when you get to see an athlete really appreciate where they're at?
Oh, it really is fantastic. And part of that is knowing their backstory, knowing how they got there. There's often a story of struggle and triumph that precedes the Olympics. And in fact, I used to know a Olympic training coach who said, you've done the work. This is the actual reward, is to get to go. The medal's kind of icing on the cake compared to the preparation you've done the entire time leading up to this day. And I thought, that really is profound, that it's not about what you actually do that particular day, that particular time. It's those, I think they said, 10,000 hours of time that you put in getting ready for your Olympic sport. And to me, that was just phenomenal. And it's very inspiring that it's not about the one day where it might be raining, or the water may not be correct in the pool, or maybe your shoes made you slip. All those things can happen during that one moment, but you were ready for that day and you'd put in the time. And that's what's amazing with these athletes. They've all put in such a long amount of time and dedication to their sport.
You got to like it along the way. You got to enjoy the practice. You got to enjoy the doing of the things. You have to enjoy, your football player. You got to enjoy running into those blocking sleds. You're a ball player. You got to love playing catch. You got to love every part of it, I think, to really succeed at that. And, the Olympics continue on. One of the big sagas has been with Simone Biles and doing a great service for taking care of mental health by checking out for a while because it wasn't safe with all the dangerous moves she had to do. She was back in action today, and being a nice guy that I am, and if you're an Olympic fan, I will tell you Simone Biles was back on the balance beam today. There's good news, but that's all I will tell you. You can find out at your leisure when you'd like to. If you want to wait till tonight and watch it on TV, feel free. But Simone Biles was back in action in Tokyo today, and there was some good news, and I'm just going to leave it at that. But now, can we talk about being a mom really is an Olympic sport? And I imagine we all, as we watch Olympics, we kind of try to put ourselves in, maybe if not doing some of the tremendous feats that our gymnasts do, or the speed that some of the track stars or the swimmers have. But we might imagine some of the everyday, and there are commercials that play into this too. It was Office Olympics and what you did in the competition. But being a mom is a very important job. It's life and death. It's keeping the little ones alive, and it's training them and educating them and hopefully turning them into good adults. And so when you look at it, there's a lot of training that goes into it. And it's kind of a fun idea, Kim, to look at motherhood as an Olympic sport. Where should we start there? I imagine training is important, huh?
Well, we're going to start with conditioning and training, because it is important that as a parent, we actually start with taking care of ourselves, right? We're kind of the athlete in this long-term Olympic race that we have to get our kids raised and to provide for them, but we have to be physically, mentally, spiritually ready for it. That means every day getting ready ourselves for our day, for our journey. So we have to remind ourselves often that having that structure for a daily life is important as the parent themselves before we even start to work with our children. And part of that is making sure every day we have a regular prayer life, making sure every day we are taking care of ourselves nutritionally, that we are getting some activity in our lives, some type of exercise. And it seems simple, right? Well, of course, Kim, we would do these things. But often I think parenthood, especially with a newborn, can be very overwhelming. And we have to make sure that we not only are taking care of ourselves, but also have the right equipment to take care of those newborns. And these kind of processes, as we think about parenting as an Olympic sport, are the very foundation. You have to condition, and you have to train for it. You have to be ready every day and stick to your routine. You have to balance each person's life in the family, right? So you can't just give all the attention to one child or another child or to the spouse. There's a balance in that. And just like when you're on the high beam, if you lean too far one way or too far the other way, it could be disastrous. And that is true in family life too. So keeping that balance for each person is one of those aspects of parenting that we can do more thoughtfully. And often I will find myself starting out my day saying, okay, what is it that my husband needs me to get done to help him be a winner today, help him be successful? What do my kids need to be successful? What did I promise that I would get done so that I can help everyone be at that finish line by the end of the day? And so that when we plan ahead, that we're always a step ahead as a parent of what the process is. It's kind of like preparing for the holidays. You try not to go out the day of the event and get all the supplies you need, all the food, all the decorations, all the gifts. You can't get it done. But if we stay ahead of that and plan ahead, we create great successes for all of our teammates, our athletes that are in our family.
Gold medal mom Kim Morgan joining us today here on Relevant Radio, taking a look at how being a mom is an Olympic sport. And Kim, of course, there are the days when the little ones might wake us up earlier. This might be many days than we had planned. But when possible, for mom and dad to be ready. And so we're not just running from behind, and some days get to be that way, but we get started before the kids so that we're not running from behind, that we are ready mentally, spiritually, as well as hopefully got that shower in too.
That's right. And sometimes those things go in a different order. And that's part of that training aspect of parenthood, is building in that flexibility to your life. Do I have the ability to take a shower now or take it later? Do I have the ability to grab some breakfast on the go, or should I sit now and have it before everyone wakes up in the morning? And sometimes you can't beat those little kids up, and you have to just work with that. But again, if you're properly prepared and thinking of not just family life as this, you know, beautiful, and it is a beautiful gift to you from God, but actually thinking of it as this is your job, this is your vocation. If someone was paying you or assessing your performance each day, how would you be rated? And are you organized? Are you prepared for the day? Do you have a mission plan? What is the success plan for each of the individuals you're in charge of for the day? I think sometimes if we looked at our job as parents like we look at our business jobs, we might perform even better than we already do. And that's an important fact to think about, is that how prepared are we for the day and how well would we be rated? And the interesting part is about parenting, it doesn't really come with like a training book or a manual. I mean, sure, there's lots of help books out there that you can read, but there's no absolute black and white to it. And even though we kind of perform as an individual, it's really a team sport, right? We've got other people we add to our team. We add the religious education instructor. We add the coach from our kids' soccer or basketball teams. We add in grandparents to help us to do driving or childcare. We add in aunts and uncles for that little extra nest that the kids so enjoy in life. So even though we see sometimes ourselves, we stand in the mirror in the morning, we look and like, okay, I got this. We have to know that if we built our team correctly, we've got a whole world of people still helping us to train up and raise correctly these young people. And that's a comforting thing to think about. And it's also one of those kind of cool joys of parenting is that you really aren't doing it totally alone.
No, we're not. With all the great help from Relevant Radio this morning there, we're your Olympic partner this morning as well. We're talking about being a mom is an Olympic sport. And there are some Olympic events that basically you're competing against yourself. It's you and the clock out there. Other times it might be an opponent that you're up against. And sometimes that opponent might be surprisingly strong. They might have a better play than you were prepared for. Kind of like life as a mom. Things will happen that you might have trained for, but not completely. Things will happen that you weren't planning on. Talk about the need to be able to handle those challenges on the go. And, you know, if things don't go exactly according to plan, well, that's kind of how things go, and we have to be trained for that.
Well, as I like to say, sometimes as a parent, I don't stick my landing. I say the wrong thing. I will yell. I will respond in a way that's not genuine or kind, and I even will make unfair choices. I'll give something to one child and not the other and realize that was totally unfair. So I am not the perfect athlete when it comes to being the Olympic mom in the household. But the important part is that we know how to recover from that. We know how to stand back up. We know how to regain our balance and say we're sorry to our kids. I know that there's been a time in parenting genres and research that says, oh, no, we should never let the kids see us weak. We should never apologize. We just move forward. But I don't agree with that, and I think a lot of more contemporary psychologists would also say the same thing, that we need to show our humanity to our kids. We need to model to them how when we're wrong and things don't work out that we can go back and correct it. We can go back and apologize for it. And the other things go wrong in parenting, right? We get our kids that come home and they don't have the grade that we were expecting, or maybe they're driving our car and the car didn't come back in the same condition that we expected. All these things are part of our daily lives as parents that they're great challenges, right? But when you look at it from a holiness point of view, God allowed us to be the caregivers of these children for this amount of time. He allowed this day to happen because he knew we could do the right thing with these kids. And they're his kids, really, right? He created them in his image and likeness, and we're given jurisdiction over them for a certain amount of time, guardianship, if you will. And again, I think that helps us keep in perspective that this isn't all about just me and my kids. There's a whole world that is affected by this, and God's allowing us to be a part of that and giving us permission to raise his children. So we have a very big task, and he knows we're not going to be perfect at it, but apparently he thought we were the best people for the job. So here we are, going forward day by day, each day training, each day trying to be as prepared as we can, and knowing that sometimes we're not always going to stick the landing.
You know, we see this Olympics as being one of the kinder, happier Olympics in some ways. We see runners fall down, and instead of screaming at one another that they ruined their Olympic gold chances, they kind of helped one another up and finished the race together. We saw a swimmer setting a world record being instantly congratulated by everybody in the pool just about swimming over to congratulate her. Others who did not finish in the gold medal spot being consoled by those who did. I see a lot of kindness out there and kind of that love of the game. If everybody's trying their hardest and just enjoying what they're doing, even if things don't go according to plan, including and maybe especially doing parenting, doing real life, if things don't always go according to plan, we're in the game. And if we love doing that game to the best of our ability, you know, we can take that tumble and maybe, you know, it's an awkward bump into that opponent and we can both get up smiling and keep going.
I think we have a very strong takeaway from that, Glenn. As parents, when we approach a situation that is unexpected, let's say in a community setting, whether it be in the neighborhood or be in the school, local school that we're at, and we have to go have a conversation with other adults, how do we approach that? Do we approach it like we're all on a team together to get these kids to the best level they can be? Are we coming in seeing everyone else as an enemy and seeing them as a threat rather than being part of the solution? And we see this play out time and time again as there are things that happen in our world that are unpredictable, and we have to adapt to the change, especially during the recent pandemic that we've been a part of. How do we approach other members in a school setting or community setting to get the best outcome from our kids? And I think sometimes we go in pretty hot and defensive, and we go in like ready for the fight, instead of looking at it like, hey, let's all try to get to the finish line the best that we can. Let's support each other on the way, and let's work out those solutions together. Now, yeah, it does sound a little Pollyanna-ish, but when you think about your own personal attitude as you walk into a board meeting, as you walk into a PTA meeting, even a parent-teacher conference, looking at the other people involved in your child's life and asking yourself, how can these people help make a difference? Now, sometimes things are unreconcilable in some situations. You can't come to a final agreement together. But I think more times than not, our attitudes have a lot to do with the outcomes of those kinds of meetings. And again, that's just part of our conditioning. It's part of our training as a parent. And was I great at that when my kids were little? No, I had no experience, no idea. Am I better now? Oh, yeah, I've been doing it a while now. And I know which things are worth calling the school for and which ones are not. And sometimes it's just better to be silent and let it play itself out in other ways and let time heal some of those wounds.
Well, Kim, as we continue our discussion on being a mom is an Olympic sport, we have to kind of keep on that 4-minute mile pace here to get through the rest of what we want to today. Maybe a minute or two on performance as a mom.
I think performance is something that you don't really get to feel the reward from until way later in life. Because for a while, I don't know if you know this, Glenn, but as a parent, you get kind of stupid from like, oh, I don't know, the time your kids are like 12 to 18. And I don't know how we all lose our memories like that, but all of a sudden, when they're 19, 20, sometimes it takes till 25 for those kids to realize, oh, well, maybe you weren't that dumb after all during those years. And I say it kind of tongue-in-cheek that our kids don't really see our full gift that we have to share with them and our full potential when they're themselves going through many, many changes and growing at such an alarming rate during those adolescent years. And we get the feedback and the review of our performance when our kids kind of become adults and they can kind of see the whole picture of it. And it's been very interesting to watch now as I've have three pretty much in adulthood to turn back and say to their siblings, I know you're having problems at home. I know things seem tense. And I just want to let you know, it's not mom and dad, it's you. You're the one causing the trouble. And to see the teenagers look at their older sisters and say, what do you mean it's me? No, it's mom and dad. They've totally lost their marbles on this. And they're like, no, you're just growing and changing. Just stay the course and be kind to mom and dad and try to listen the best you can because this too will change. And I thought, oh, well, this is rich coming from the kid who never listened when they were growing up themselves. But the point of being in training as a parent, conditioning every day, being consistent, following through with what your plan is, pays off because they eventually do grow and adapt to that kind of structure. And what it basically is in the Catholic Church's eyes is a well-ordered life, right? We have balance, the Benedictine model of balance of work, play, and pray, and we have a well-ordered life. The things that are important are out in the front, and we have to leave some of the things behind that aren't so necessary or important in our lives. And our older children that become then young adults are able to go back and reflect on that. So then we can see some of how our performance rating goes. And I'm not saying each of us is perfect by any means, and we don't need to be. We just need to raise children that are well-ordered, and resiliency is a big factor in that. How to teach your child to rebound. I had to laugh that on an app that I follow on social media, there was a parent who wanted to hire someone, this was yesterday, hire someone to make their child an animal balloon because their child loved this little animal balloon and it popped, and they wanted to replace it for their child. Now, they, you know, on the surface, you're like, okay, that's a caring parent. That parent's going the extra mile. Nope, wrong answer. That parent is failing to teach resiliency and to teach about a loss. If we can't learn to move on from a popped balloon, how are we ever going to learn to move on from the loss of a friend who moved away or a pet that passes away or some of the bigger losses we have in life? Let's start the lesson with a little pop balloon. Let's not try to sugarcoat their whole life and keep them in a bubble. And so as much as we think, oh, that was caring and sweet and she was willing to pay for it, no, that's not really helping her child at all. This is a wrong angle towards the parenting goal.
Well, Kim, we appreciate your effort at the Mom Olympics through all the years and for being with us today as well. And I got a gold medal for you here next time you hear that that anthem. Just proudly imagine it being draped around your neck. But thanks for joining us this morning with a look at the heroic work that being a parent entails. We continue with Morning Air. Coming up next, Father Thomas Loya talks about preparation for a sacramental marriage. It starts really, really young. A hint, it's in the womb. That's as Morning Air continues next here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Get connected to the conversation. Call us now at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. You're listening to Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Sure plays a mean pinball.
Morning Air continues here on Relevant Radio. It's Glenn in for John today. Thanks so much for joining us. Our story corner for the day coming up right before the top of the hour as well. Right now I'm talking about marriage prep. It starts really young, our conversation this hour, with Father Thomas Loya from Homer Glen, Illinois. He's pastor of Annunciation of the Mother of God Byzantine Catholic Parish in Homer Glen, Illinois. Father Loya, welcome. Great to have you along today.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Well, I tell you, you guys must do a pretty extensive pre-cana. We talk about actually preparation for marriage going way back to starting in the womb. But marriage prep, like you say, yeah. Father, should be more than just, we want to do this in 6 months. We better call the church. But as a lifelong preparation for that vocation.
Yes, it really is. In fact, Glenn, when you use the key word vocation, and there's two vocations, capital with a capital V, and marriage or religious life. And the reason is because they are a complete and total gift of self, a dying to self, a reaffirmation for a baptism, a dying to self, and a rising to serving and making a gift of herself to others, you know, for people, the church, a spouse, and so on. And that is something that needs to be taught and formed in a person, I always say, like from the moment of conception. In other words, in the womb, they say that babies can even sense things that are going outside of the mother's body while they're in the womb. And what they need to get is the message of what I'm going to call the sacramental worldview. Marriage is a sacrament. But you see, our whole Catholic faith, the whole mystery of life, revolves about one thing, and one thing only, one great mystery, the incarnation. The invisible God has become visible through the physical world that he created. And life is all about seeing that and sharing that. In other words, seeing God everywhere, experiencing God everywhere at all times and all things. When a child is brought up that way, I like to recommend three words: gift, gratitude, and wonderment. when we bring a child up in that kind of ethos, what's happening is their whole life becomes a preparation for marriage, so that when they come to the point of getting married, they sort of, what I call, serenely walk into that sacrament. Pre-Cana, marriage preparation, should be kind of like the final tweaking of that, of what should have been a lifelong formation in this sacramental worldview. In other words, they should come to the marriage, come to a marriage preparation already with a sense of knowing how to die to self, make a gift to self, see everything first and foremost in light of Christ and of our eternal destiny. And when a child is raised that way, and they had that sense of wonderment, of gratitude, that's that sacramental worldview, what happens is you're already ready to make that commitment to give of yourself, which marriage requires. The problem we have today is that young people coming to be married, their worldview is already crystallized in what is really a non-sacramental worldview, a rather secularized worldview. And here, when you have a pre-Cana program, no matter whether it's a weekend, a few days, a few weeks, whatever, okay, they're fine, they're good in and of themselves and necessary. I do them myself, of course. But it's, in a sense, too late. I mean, you're trying to then reorient their whole spirituality in those few sessions, because they're coming to marriage with a non-sacramental worldview. And to undo that, to change that, is almost impossible. I mean, they can change. So I think what we have to do in the church is we have to really focus on how to raise children with that sacramental worldview, so that they're ready when they're already approaching that time of marriage. And, yeah, it takes a lifetime. It takes the proper parenting and for people to understand what that sacramental worldview is, which is really the Catholic ethos, the Catholic worldview. It's Eucharistic, mystical, meaning you're always seeing things in light of their ultimate destiny, their ultimate meaning. It's not just relationship between man and woman. It's not just, oh, well, we like each other, we fall in love, we want to be together with each other for our life. Okay, that's good, it's okay. But, and I'm going to present the image of the cross. The image of the cross is one that has a horizontal bar and a vertical bar. Think of the horizontal bar, the two people in a relationship. Okay, they're relating to each other. But the vertical bar, the cross, points our gaze to something above that, and that is our heavenly destiny. And a couple has to realize that their relationship is not just about me and her, you know, her and me. And if that goes well, then everything is okay. If it's not going well, then we, you know, it falls apart and we have a divorce. No, it's you, the two of you, yes, but with your gaze first and foremost on that vertical bar, what it's pointing to, that you are brother and sister in the Lord first and foremost. Then you're becoming spouse. But individually, your gaze must be first and foremost on Christ individually and as a couple. And when that happens, you're guaranteed to have a happy marriage. I'm not talking that nothing bad will happen, there won't be difficulties. But you're going to be guaranteed to experience a truly sacramental marriage. If a couple can think of that image of the cross, it's not just how they're feeling about each other. It's about each other as their gaze is first and foremost fixed on Christ.
Father, in a society where currently marriage rates are declining, and those that are bothering to get married might have grown up with the idea that, well, okay, this is somebody I like and I kind of don't want to be without, so we'll get married, and that's the extent of that. I know for myself growing up as a Lutheran, but becoming Catholic as an adult, and learning that, wow, my job as a married guy is to get my spouse to heaven. Well, that's pretty good meaning in life when that's your job, and realizing that that marriage is the vocation. It's not just someone you hang out with and you know, your job is what you really like to do. And, you know, but the importance of that in a world that is really seeking desperately for meaning, to know how much meaning we have when our job is to get that spouse to heaven.
Yes, absolutely. Marriage is a venue in which two people are completely revealed to each other. And as they are revealed to each other, it's a continual revealing of oneself. All of your beauty, your good your good points, your virtues, but also all of your fallen side. And that all comes out in marriage. Marriage exposes that. It's a venue for this to happen. And in that exposing of selves to each other comes then the continual choice to love, to choose to love. One of the things that married couples need to avoid is going into a marriage with expectations. You should have dreams. Try to have a common vision, hopes and dreams. Yep, absolutely, but not expectations. So the expectation is what will militate against that choice to love. It's like, oh, you're not who I thought you were. You're not who I imagined you would be. I hoped you would be. Therefore, I want to get rid of you. You know, I want to divorce you. This is what happens so often. People are married for a while, and all of a sudden, it's like, a lot of times, it's a surprise. One spouse says to the other, I want a divorce. Another one is shocked. Well, what happened? Well, you're not what I thought you would be. You're not what I wanted you to be. So don't have expectations, hopes and dreams, and choose to love. No matter what you encounter, there has to be that choice to love that person. And in that venue, when that happens, you grow in sanctity. And you do help each other get to heaven.
Brother Thomas Loya joining us on Morning Air today here on Relevant Radio, taking a look at preparing for marriage, that lifelong process, and how to look at that spouse as not someone who is or isn't meeting our expectations and grade them on that. But as we talked the previous half hour, Father, about motherhood being an Olympic sport and understanding that sometimes that competitor out there on the Olympic battlefield will pull some tricks on us, something will happen that we weren't maybe prepared for, and we may go down. But the ability to get back up again and know that, if everything doesn't go according to plan A, our Lord can be there, especially in marriage, with plan B and C and D to continue to be able to love our spouse.
Yes, yes, absolutely. You see, we sometimes think that if things go wrong, if we have falls or whatever comes our way, that means that all is lost, and we sometimes despair, or this must end. But no, you can work through, Glenn, I always say there's no such thing as a marriage problem. There really is. I do a lot of marriage counseling, and this is what I tell couples. Really what the problem is, the problem is spirituality, and they're not knowing who they really are as man and woman, why they are, the mystical why, and how to be that for each other. That's where all the so-called problems come in. It's not a marriage problem. Marriage is the venue that exposes the couple that they need work in that area as individuals and as a relationship, their spirituality and how they're meeting each other's needs, understanding each other as man and woman. When they don't understand that, they end up hurting each other, and then it kind of spirals downward, and all that is unnecessary. You really can, I'm very confident, as I work with married couples, you really can, with the right sacramental worldview, with understanding these two pillars, spirituality and who we are as man and woman, you can actually heal any marriage. I really am very confident on that. You can heal just about any marriage if you understand those things, because that's really what it is. And just that a couple doesn't know that, and that's how they start to have problems. They think it's a marriage problem. No, it's a problem there individually and as a couple understanding these two, I call it, two pillars of marriage.
The expectation game, is that at the heart of so much trouble in marriage?
Oh, absolutely, because our ethos, our concept of marriage, of so many things, is not formed enough by our faith, by the church, and not faulting the church. I'm just saying how the secular world is. It's so pervasive. We have this sort of Hollywoodized version of marriage and romance, you know, that there is this sort of, like, you know, thrill and this wonderful thing, and then it's supposed to be like that all the time. And then you realize how this person is, their difficulties, what they brought to the marriage and so on, and you have to ask yourself, okay, this isn't what I necessarily wanted or dreamed about or expected, but I have to choose to love it. You know, for all time, for most of history, for most all cultures in the world, arranged marriages was the norm, and they got married very young. You put them together, and you sort of like, okay, have at it. You know, just learn to love each other. It's only in recent times, and in modern Western civilization, that we've had this sort of fantasy idea of marriage, that, you know, this fall in love, you know, this high romantic thing that's supposed to stay all the time. It's like almost like an illusion. And when that starts to decay, then we start to get disillusioned, that expectation is not met, and this is where the trouble starts, and we start to hurt each other. But we need to revisit what marriage really is and really how it was done for centuries. It was basically come together and make that continual choice to love each other through it all, not to expect someone to be as you want them to be. And if they're not, then you don't love them anymore.
Good marriage advice today. We've got that as we talk about marriage prep. We do that with Father Thomas Loya. As Morning Air continues, we'd love to hear from you, too. If you have questions, 888-914-9149. Maybe it's a trick or a tip that you have after years of successful marriage, too. Feel free to weigh in at 888-914-9149. More on marriage with Father Thomas Loya as we continue with Morning Air next here on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Get connected to the conversation. Call us now at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. You're listening to Morning Air with John Morales on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Morning Air continues. It's Glenn in for John. We continue our conversation now about marriage and marriage prep and more with Father Thomas Loya, and your calls at 888-914-9149. Father, a big part of marriage is kids, and a big challenge to how a man and woman get along together in marriage is working out that parenting stuff. Let's talk about how we ought to look at children and the arrival or spacing of children.
Yes. The church teaches, and rightfully so, this works best. When you understand what the church is really saying and you follow that, it's going to work best. Doesn't mean it's not going to be without struggle or even sometimes tragedies or whatever, but it still will work best. What the church says is it doesn't really use this term. We have to be careful of this term like spacing, even the term natural family planning. And again, this is a little bit of an area to look at when it comes to marriage preparation. Oftentimes when I've had many people come to me and say they never even got this dimension in their pre-cana, this aspect of the natural family planning, the church's teaching on children and so on. Or if they got it, it's oftentimes presented like, well, Catholic contraception. In other words, there's a strong emphasis on, okay, do it naturally, but here's how you can avoid getting pregnant, so you can space the children. And again, that's the wrong spirituality. The spirituality of children should be, as the church really teaches, is that there should always be an openness to life. No, the church isn't saying that a woman should be pregnant constantly. There should always be an openness to life, because that's really an openness to God. And if you read Humani Vitae, there's a very critical word in there, which we don't always get the nuance of it, but it says, for grave reasons, the couple can decide for a time to maybe delay in a natural way a conception. But they still have to be open to the fact that there might be a conception, because it's that window open for God. So the grave reason doesn't mean, well, we can't afford a kid right now, whatever. Because what does that mean? You know, we said that we're through this time now where we're supposed to have fewer children because we can't afford to have more. Well, we've gone now to it's like 1.5 kids per family now in most of the world, and yet people are in debt. No one can ever make ends meet. Well, what happened? I thought we were supposed to have all this money. So we can give our children everything because there's fewer of them. Well, the problem is I find, certainly as a pastor too, as a priest working with families, that the families with larger families oftentimes do much better in that area, even in the area of the family finance, the household finances do better. Why? Because, it's that ethos of self-discipline and self-giving, of donation, of self-donation, not selfishness, and of priorities. And it works. The openness to life, again, it's not that the church is saying women should be barefoot and pregnant all the time, like many people characterize the church as saying. It's not true. It's just saying they should always have an openness to life. If for grave reason you think we need to delay or not have a pregnancy at this time, okay, for grave reason that you have to arrive at through a lot of prayer and discernment, and then at the same time, still be open to God's will, to life. If you do that, you will be a happier family and happier marriage. I guarantee it, because you're doing God's will. You're doing it the way God designed it, the way the church is trying to teach people. So children should be seen as a gift. There should always be an openness to it, grave reasons to delay it. And if a couple lives by that, they'd be amazed at how much better their household economy is going to work. Believe it or not, it seems counterintuitive, but it does. I see it all the time. And how much better the character of the children will be. You know, having many children is actually good for the development of the children themselves, like teenagers. One of the things that really helps teenagers in their psycho-spiritual development is having younger siblings. So you actually create a more mature person, a more industrious person. Many, many people who come from large families are very successful in life in many ways. And I'm not just talking about they make a lot of money, but they accomplish themselves. They become very self-possessed people, people that can be relied on. They become leaders. They become confident and very, very productive people because the lessons of that bigger family gave them, equipped them with those skills for life, for your character as a person. And this is one of the many reasons, again, the wisdom behind, you know, God's wisdom about being open to life. And we're not saying that everybody has to have, you know, a minimum of 10 children or whatever, but and whatever big family is, it's kind of a relative thing. But we have to move beyond this idea that, well, we have to be careful because we can't afford a child. What does that really mean, you can't afford, especially by today's standards? Most of the time, it means I can't give them every video game they want or a certain house that they want to live in and so on. Many times, that's what that means. So it's a very kind of nebulous term, I can't afford a child. And that's a lot of people use as their criterion. The church is saying, put God first, put life first, put God's way first, especially in regard to children, and seek first the kingdom. The rest will be given to you. And it is true. You know, my brother's a deacon in church. He helps me with my pre-Cana classes. And one of the reasons is because he has 8 children, and he has no debts. He paid his house off, car. He has children in college, a Jesuit university. You know, it's not cheap. He has no debts. He's not rich. He's like anybody else. He and his wife are like, you know, average, good American Catholic people. They're not rich. They didn't inherit anything. And how does he do it? How in the world can you have 8 children and have no debts? That's precisely why I have him talk in our pre-Cana classes, because he's a living witness to it. How does that happen? Because they put God first. They did it God's way, and God blessed that, as he will for any family. Doesn't mean there won't be some struggles or difficulties, but in the end, you'll be blessed. The larger families actually bring in more income in different ways. You've got other sets of eyes and hands to look after younger siblings. You have more people to kind of help out the whole family, the whole domestic church, the whole family economy. You have people who grow up realizing that it's not just about me. I have to share with others. I have to die to self, think of others. There's all kinds of great, great character development that happens when families are more open to life.
Father, it may be anecdotal, but I know some of the larger families I'm familiar with 8, 9, 10 kids, the parents actually seem much more relaxed than those with 1, 2, or 3 kids. And we joke that it might be they're just worn out and they don't have much fight left in them, but they seem to enjoy things as they come. But at the same token, when you mentioned, wow, the older kids in a large family often grow up with such a great sense of responsibility and are very productive through the years themselves. I've often noted that some of the older daughters in some of these large families, if they would just put, you know, eldest daughter of the XYZ family on their resume, they'd get hired anywhere on the planet, because that was great training for doing great things as well. But also, as part of it, we don't have enough confidence moving forward, enough confidence in the Lord that we can figure this out and to realize over the space of time, financially, things will go up and down over the course of our lives, even, you know, not depending on the number of kids, but a variety of things happen. Better jobs come along, good jobs get lost, unforeseen circumstances come along and can wipe out money, and then we unexpectedly find ways to make more. And I hate to see some of these financial things. Oh, a child that was, you know, coming of age during the recession, they're going to have X percentage of lower income their entire life. And that, you know, is going to set them up for a tougher life all the way through. You know, that may or may not be the case. But do we ultimately need more confidence in the Lord that he can lead us through all of these things?
Absolutely. And you're right about the couples being more relaxed, because when you have a larger family, it's like, okay, what's another skin knee? We've been there before, you know. You know, they take things a lot more in stride. And again, going back to that, they don't have expectations for perfection. They realize that in a certain sense, a certain degree of chaos in the family is going to be the norm. You know, it's not always going to be perfectly clean. It's not always going to be perfectly in order. Things aren't going to be always perfect. And they learn to live with that. So in other words, they can take what comes. They're much more adaptable to taking what comes in life, you know, to playing with the cards that were often dealt by life. And this makes for a much more relaxed family, a character-building family. And it all comes down to spirituality, to our faith. Do we pursue marriage and family according to the mind of the church, which is God's mind? If we do that with faith, all these blessings will come. It can happen. It can work. We have to trust that. And look at families that do. Like I mentioned, going back to my brother, you know, every one of his children is... They've all, and I'm not just boasting as my brother. It's a witness because of the character development in that large family and the way they did it according to God and mind the church. I can tell you that he has 8 kids. Every one of those kids excels in whatever they're doing. They're always at the top of everything, and not because they have a drive to do good for ego. They just live according to the virtues, and it puts them at the head of the class. I marvel at them, that they're always basically the best at whatever they're in, and it has nothing to do with them trying to be competitive. They just are living life according to the virtues they learn growing up. So again, you don't have to worry about the kids being successful or having enough money and so on like that. You pursue the kingdom of God first. Pursue God's way according to the mind of the church. And God will bless that in ways you couldn't imagine. You know, people look at him and say, how could you possibly have all those children and, you know, what you're doing to them? And they're not deprived of anything. They're perfectly happy. They've had whatever they needed, and they're excelling in life. They're doing well in life. And now they're even having some of their own children and raising them with those same virtues. So I can't emphasize enough. It comes down to trusting our faith. And we have to resist that voice of the world that's telling us the opposite, that you need this and you need that and you're in control and you've got to be happy because you have to be able to afford this and that, so don't have too many children. You know, what does that mean, too many children? Trust God. I guarantee you, you're going to have a happier marriage and a happy family.
Always enjoy talking with you. Thanks so much for the encouragement to be strong Catholic families out there. It's Father Thomas Loya joining us here. Morning Air continues now with a look at today's Story Corner. Our story today called Too Busy to Pray. I got up early one morning and rushed right into the day. I had so much to accomplish, I didn't take time to pray. Problems just tumbled about me, and heavier came each task. Why doesn't God help me, I wondered, and he answered, you didn't ask. I tried to come into God's presence. I used all my keys at the lock. God gently and lovingly chided, why, child, you didn't knock. I wanted to see joy and beauty, but the day toiled on, gray and bleak. I wondered why God didn't show me. He answered, but you didn't seek. I woke up early this morning and paused before entering the day. I had so much to accomplish that I had to take time to pray. 1 Thessalonians 5:16 through 18. St. Paul reminds us, rejoice always, pray without ceasing. Give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. It's our story for today. You can hear it again on our podcast version of the Story Corner on the Relevant Radio app or online at relevantradio.com. And as always, you can send your Story Corner suggestions to us. morningair@relevantradio.com is our email. Join us tomorrow on Morning Air in this hour, Father Marcel Tyone, along with a look at St. John Vianney and the vocation of the priesthood. Dave Duran with us as well, and you know there'll be a little Viking Packer banter there too. Up next, the man with all the answers, Patrick Madrid. Coming up next after a look at news headlines with Paul, right here on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app. And thanks to producers Mariano and Gabby as well.